of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We are going to announce the grand prize winner of our Blitz the Bayou contest at the end of this segment. About 10 minutes from right now, we will announce the winner of Blitz the Bayou. That's why we're at this prize location here today. Tatum and Shea, Pepsi, our proud sponsor and partner of Blitz the Bayou. It's been a great week registering folks for this big trip, New Orleans. Pepsi's been a big part of it. We're here at this prize. We got Pepsi specials all weekend.
Oh, absolutely. Right now you get a 12-pack of Pepsi, just $2.79 each when you buy three. We've got them all on the table right now. The Diet Pepsi, the Pepsi Zero, the regular Pepsi. Come on in. Take advantage of it at Fry's.
So we will be announcing that name coming up in just about 10 minutes or so. You're going to want to stay tuned for that. The young quarterback revolution. There's two things going on here that we're talking about. There's a story in the LA Times, and it was centered in part around Kyler Murray. But it was just overall these younger quarterbacks who are coming in the league and playing well. I mean, almost right away. Kyler Murray, he's on pace to break a lot of Andrew Luck's rookie records. Even a guy like Gardner Minshew as a sixth-round pick, right, for Jacksonville?
Yes, the next Tom Brady.
Success right away. Devlin Hodges from Pittsburgh, undrafted guy out of Samford, comes in and plays. Now, was he playing well, or did they design a game plan to kind of mask his weaknesses? Either way, he was a winning quarterback against the LA Chargers on Sunday Night Football. Young quarterbacks coming in right away, having success. And the LA Times tried to figure out why, and they looked at all the reasons why young quarterbacks are just better equipped now to have success in this league. Do you have do you agree with it? And B, do you have a theory as to why younger quarterbacks are better prepared to succeed now than maybe they were?
My theory is that this, over the last 2 or 3 years, a bunch of things have happened that have allowed these young quarterbacks to play. And we just go, if we do a 3-year period, we could see that Carson Palmer retired and Tony Romo retired and Sam Bradford's out of the league right now. And then you could look at the injuries, right? Ben Roethlisberger's hurt. Foles is hurt. Cam is hurt. RG3 was hurt. Eli got benched. Mariota got benched. Tannehill got kicked to the curb. Flacco got kicked to the curb. Tyrod Taylor, Sanchez, Johnny Manziel didn't work out. So I think there's just been this 3-year period in which a lot of the quarterbacks that teams were looking at to be their guy, things happened. Injuries, trades, retirements, and guys not playing well. And about half the league had this happen to them all in a 3-year period, which has allowed for all these younger quarterbacks to come in and get an opportunity to play.
But do you think these younger quarterbacks are they're taking advantage of the opportunity by playing as well as they are, right?
Yes.
I mean, they're Gardner Minshew? I mean, who would have predicted in a million years that Gardner Minshew would come in? Who would have predicted in a million years that Kyle Allen would come in and give the Carolina Panthers a reason to, man, maybe we shouldn't bring back Cam Newton. Maybe we should pause Cam Newton because we're winning games with Kyle Allen. I mean, I agree with you. The opportunities for the younger guys have been immense over the last few years. But the way some of these guys are playing, I mean, we're not talking about the number one pick overall in Kyler Murray. He's played great. We're talking about guys who were picked in the sixth round. We're talking about guys who weren't picked at all in the NFL draft who are coming in and winning. Why?
Listen, the Jets every year, from Mark Sanchez to Geno Smith to Bryce Petty, they were getting guys every year, and none of them worked out. And then they get Sam Darnold, and maybe he'll work out. So, I mean, Paxton Lynch didn't work out in Denver. Josh Rosen didn't work out in Arizona. There's plenty of quarterbacks that have been in the league and didn't work out. Not everybody's Jared Goff or Carson Wentz or Kyler Murray. There's been a lot of teams that drafted guys to be the quarterbacks, and those guys just didn't work out. It didn't work, and they've had to get other guys. The Denver Broncos, we just talked about this earlier. How many shots is John Elway going to have of trying to fix the quarterback
situation? Not many more, based off of the lack of success he's had in trying to find a quarterback for that organization.
Drew Lock doesn't work out. Can you really trust John Elway to make the next quarterback decision?
I can't. Nope.
If Drew Lock is a failure,
yeah.
And I don't know much time, but he's going to come off the injured list and be ready to play. And he might get into a game in the next couple of weeks here.
Yeah. The LA Times went through a bunch of reasons they think why these young quarterbacks are having success right away. And they talked to Steve Young and Troy Aikman extensively about it. And they suggested the training is just better now than it was. The playbooks are simpler now than they used to be because the CBA doesn't allow for as much coaching and doesn't allow for as much time spent between coaches and players. The defenses and the rule changes making it so much easier for receivers downfield, defenseless players, quarterbacks not getting hit. Steve Young was on the Adam Schefter podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he said, look, quite simply, the biggest difference from when I played is this.
When I came to the pros, people say, what's the difference? And I would say, well, in college, everybody's open. In the pros, nobody's open. Now, that might be an overstatement, but not by much. I mean, it was just brutal. I mean, having some time to throw, having somebody come open. I mean, I was like, there's somebody flash because there doesn't look like there's anybody open. I would say that today, it'd be again, in college, I think people are still wide open. And I think in the pros, more guys are open than ever before.
Why are more guys more open than ever before?
Yards are cheap, especially some of these more prolific offenses. And not they're cheaper. They're not cheap. It's just cheaper than – and I'm not saying, oh, in the old days. I'm just saying the facts on the ground, the game's been trying to be made safer. The rules have been different, and it's just better for offense. And it's become less fair for defense.
He's citing defensive changes, rule changes, right? I mean, sure. Making it so much easier for – so guys – they weren't open in the NFL. Now they are open in the NFL because the rules make it easier for them to be open in the NFL. And I do think there's something to do with that. But then I also like what Troy Aikman said in the piece. He goes, look, it's a lot easier to be a quarterback these days with the rule changes and everything. But he goes, man, there is so much more pressure on these quarterbacks now than there ever was.
Well, they got to play early. They got to play so early.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, Young was in the USFL, and then he was behind Montana, and then he got his opportunity. By the way, I mean, there's so many – there's so many wide-open touchdown passes to Jerry Rice when he was at the 49ers, so he's exaggerating the fact that nobody was ever open. He had Jerry Rice to throw the ball to for his years in San Francisco, and he was wide open on a lot of those plays because he was Jerry Rice. But it is – listen, it's clearly different, right? These guys come into the league. They're playing right away. Murray's playing right away. Rosen was playing right away. Baker was playing right away. Darnold's playing right away. Allen's playing right away. Daniel Jones is playing right away. So the majority of these guys got to play right away. This isn't the, oh, let's the Aaron Rodgers thing. Let's sit for a few years and then you get to play. No, I mean, it might be great to have a guy sit for a year or two, but it's just not logical today. These guys get into games and they play in that first year.
Yeah, the quote from Aikman, quote, we try to draw conclusions, definitive statements on quarterbacks two or three games into their careers. Forget a season. That was unheard of before. I say it all the time. If the evaluations were as immediate as they are now, I wouldn't have made it. Shoot, Terry Bradshaw wouldn't have made it. And he's right. I mean, we are – it's almost like we're under – we're almost under this pressure to decide after three or four games. Is Daniel Jones the answer? Yes or no? Declare. Is Kyler Murray the answer? Yes or no? Declare. Is Josh Rosen the answer? Yes or no? Declare. And it's like, man, let's give him – what happened to the good old days of giving him a season or two before we had to declare whether a guy – like what's going on in Tampa and what's going on in Nashville, in Tennessee.
Tennessee, Mariota and Winston.
Those guys had years and years and years, and both of them don't look like they're the future franchise quarterback of their teams. They're not very good, but at least they had the benefit of time to prove whether they should be or not.
I mean, I can make you an argument that Cincinnati's given Andy Dalton a hell of a lot of time.
Way too much more time, right?
Yeah, he's not going to win there.
All right, let's announce our grand prize winner. Son of a gun, we'll help me
fun on the Bayou. Blitz the Bayou.
Really proud because this was one of our qualifiers.
Oh, you're damn right. That's one of our qualifiers. Yeah.
Jesus. Tacho.
Yeah. Oh.
From El Mirage.
Tacho.
Jesus Tacho.
Oh, Jesus is the winner.
Congratulations, man. You are headed to New Orleans for some football and some gumbo, and you're doing it thanks to Pepsi and the Burt Gang Travel Club. You are off to Nolens to see some football and eat some gumbo.
Yeah.
Jesus Pacho.
Go get a Pepsi and celebrate tonight, Jesus. You deserve it.
You guys,
go get a Pepsi.
No lie, he tweeted us at 10 o'clock this morning and said, can't wait to see if I'm the grand prize winner.
No way.
Dead serious. I'll retweet it.
Did he really?
Please, yes.
That's awesome. Jesus, we're going to have a great time, man.
Woo!
We are going to have a great time, me and you. It's going to be a blast.
How do you know he's going to pick you?
Yeah, how do you know he's not going to pick me?
How do you know he's going to pick you, Sarah?
I'm fun.
What about me? I'm the one who read his name, right? I'm the one who actually spoke his name into existence.
That's true.
I'm like LeVar Ball over here, man. I spoke it into existence.
I gotta find this tweet from Jesus.
Take me.
Tacho.
I'm about to retweet it from the Burns and Gambo account.
Congratulations, Jesus. And thanks to all of our listeners who registered. Thanks to all of our qualifiers and all of our finalists. And we appreciate everybody's support. We thank Pepsi. We thank the Bird Gang Travel Club for all of their help.
That's cool. What a great prize.
What a great prize.
That's
congratulations
awesome.
To Jesus Tacho and for tweeting out earlier today. Man, I hope I win. That's awesome. Tomorrow's winner in Salt Lake City is going to have a leg up on the rest of the Pac-12 South. But for ASU, is tomorrow's game now a rivalry game in a weird kind of a way? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. I love it when somebody writes something that or says something or whatever that they've never really thought about before. It makes you kind of look at things in a totally different way. Somebody today in writing a game preview, and this is at Rivals.com, somebody today in writing a game preview about ASU and Utah this weekend, which for my money, and I think you agree. Actually, I don't know if you agree with this. I think this is the biggest game Herm Edwards has coached in as coach of ASU. There is more on the line tomorrow against Utah than any game he's ever coached in for ASU.
Yeah, this is
you can say the rivalry game against Arizona is bigger because it's Arizona.
I wish this was later in the season, because then I could buy it. If it's because if they lose this game and then they lose to USC and they lose to Oregon and they end up going to the to a bowl game that it's not a preferred bowl game.
Yeah.
Then are we really going to look back at that Utah game and say it was the best game, the biggest game of the season?
No, but in the moment, if we're living in the moment, I agree with you. They could win this game and still lose the Pac-12 South. They could lose this game and still win the Pac-12 South. Nothing's decided, but they're in the driver's seat, and given in the moment what's on the line, this is it, man. This is the biggest game I think Herm Edwards has coached in for ASU.
So up until this game, I would have said it was the U of A game last year. I mean, they were down, they came back, they won. It was his first rivalry game. It was Sumlin's first rivalry game. So it had a lot of meaning. So I would have said that game. But the stakes are much higher now.
Yeah.
Because the stakes are you win this game, you're in the driver's seat to win the Pac-12 South. You win the Pac-12 South, who's to say you can't win it this year? I mean, who's to say you can't beat an Oregon or a Washington? Or you can't, probably Oregon. But who's to say you can't win that game and get to the Rose Bowl? So I would, at this point, I would agree. But it all depends on how the season, if they end up winning the Pac-12 South, we'll look back at that Utah game. So that was the biggest game.
Mm-hmm.
They went on the road and they beat Utah. Bigger than going on the road and beating Michigan State. Bigger than going on the road and beating Cal.
So I'm reading this preview today, this game on Rivals.com, and Joe Healy is the guy who wrote it. And one of his keys to the game was to make it personal. And what he meant by that was, and he wrote this basically, he said, look, we all know Arizona is the main rival for ASU. Is this rivalry 1A for ASU? U of A is 1, Utah is 1A. And he writes, who knows, but the Sun Devils should treat it as such because the impression is that Utah approaches this game like ASU's kind of a rival. So I went tooling around on their site, and sure enough, I found a story that included quotes from people in Utah, including the play-by-play voice of the Utes, who said, you know what, ASU is kind of a rival for us.
How?
ASU six
lost them the last 2 years?
ASU 6-2 against them since Utah joined the Pac-12. The last 2 years, ASU has been an underdog, and ASU has won both games. 2 years ago, the last time they were up in Salt Lake City, they threw the pitchfork down at midfield, after winning the game. The recruiting guys oftentimes choose ASU over Utah or Utah over ASU. We saw that with both Jay Daniels
and Eno Benjamin. Fair point.
So between the recruit, and for some reason, there's a social media presence in Utah that puts a lot of stake and significance into beating ASU. It didn't seem very obvious to me either, but the writer of this article made a really compelling case that between the social media, the recruiting, and just the relatively brief history of these two programs, that Utah at least seems to look at ASU as a little bit of a rival, a team that is worth beating for a measure of not a bigger rival than BYU.
No, I mean, BYU's their top
rival. That's their top rival.
Yeah.
And certainly Utah's not going to replace the Wildcats as ASU's top rival. But
Utah State is not Utah State's not like ASU U of A.
But as our buddies Bickley Murata talked about earlier in the week, ASU's in a rare position where, unlike most other schools in the Pac-12, they don't really have another school that they're rivals with. Oregon's got Oregon State and Washington. Washington's got Washington State and Oregon. Stanford's got Cal and the Southern California schools. The Southern California schools
and
have
Notre
more
Dame.
Rivals than we know what to do with. Notre Dame, exactly. ASU's got U of A, and that's it. They don't have anybody else.
Because they haven't been good enough.
Right.
I mean, it's a bottom line.
No, you're 110%
correct. All the teams that you just mentioned, Washington, Oregon, Stanford, had a lot of success in the Pac-12 recently. They've all had a lot of success in the last 10 years. Stanford had a four-year run where they were going to big bowl games every year.
Absolutely.
Oregon's been in the playoffs. You know, Washington's had success. So the difference with ASU is that they haven't been good enough to have another rival besides U of A. And U of A hasn't been good enough to have another rival besides ASU. To develop a second rivalry, you've got to play good football. Mm-hmm. You've got to be a threat. You've got to be somebody that teams need to beat to get where they want to go.
I don't think this is a rivalry yet, no matter how much the guys on social media would like to try to make it such, or the recruits or slamming down a pitchfork at midfield 2 years ago up in Salt Lake City. But I'll tell you this. If UCLA continues their downturn and USC can't figure it out anytime soon, and Pac-12 South supremacy is decided over the next half decade by who wins between ASU and Utah, oh, then you're darn tootin', it'll become a rivalry. Then it will absolutely become because bigger things will be on the line. Important things, things that matter, will be on the line when these two teams meet. It's not there yet, but I think given the state of affairs in Southern California, the Pac-12 right now, there's a decent chance that for the next few years, maybe this matchup does routinely decide who wins the Pac-12 South.
The other thing that would help in developing a rivalry is the fact that the Pac-12 is now split between North and South. Because it's not, you don't have to just win the Pac-12, you could win the Pac-12 North. And then the Pac-12, somebody could win the Pac-12 South. And that's only been, what have we had, about 5 or 6 years of that, maybe?
2011 was the first
2011,
year.
Yeah, so boy, is it 8 years? So it's still somewhat in its infancy of having these, you know, the Pac-12 South and the Pac-12. It's not even 10 years. It's not even 9 years. So that could develop rivalries, too, within the, you know, the division, the North and the South. You could develop rivalries.
Huge game tomorrow, 3 o'clock. Weather's going to be a factor. Utah is highly ranked in a lot of different offensive and defensive categories. It has come against a very questionable schedule so far. So that's kind of the big question going into this game. How Utah's got a good roster, really good roster, a lot of talent on it. How for real are they? Because their numbers would suggest they're one of the best teams in the country. Are they? Are they that good? Or are they a product of the schedule that they've played? Because their schedule has not been great so far.
I don't think they can get to a playoff based on the fact that they didn't play anybody non-conference. We had a guy on yesterday who said, hey, they're going to play Florida in like 2022 and 21. They're going to play home and home with Florida. But the old AD did not want to schedule any tough opponents non-conference because they were trying to get their footing in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
So it comes back to bite them in the ass a little bit when they have a good year because they don't have anybody on their non-conference schedule.
Mainly out of necessity. The Arizona Cardinals have had to use young players in some very key roles early. And because of that, they're getting some really good rookie production from a few of those spots 6 games into the season. That is next here on the Burns and Gambo Show. John Gambadero, Dave Burns, hanging out with you on this Football Friday, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We're going to be here at the Fry's, Tatum and Shea, for another half hour or so. If you want to come by and say hi to us, we've had so many nice people come up and say hello to us today so far. We're here with our official partners of Blitz the Bayou with Pepsi. Pepsi has been our proud partners of this all week long, registering folks to win that trip to New Orleans, to watch some football, eat some gumbo, hang out in the bayou,
man,
blitz
what a
the bayou.
Trip. And yep. One of our listeners won.
Jesus
came through
Touch
in the clutch.
Him. And
how happy is he right now?
Thank you guys so much, he tweeted out. My wife and I are currently in San Diego for our anniversary.
Oh,
wow.
Man.
What an exciting gift for us. P.S. I would have chosen at Bernsey987 to go with me.
Where is this? I don't even see it.
Well, he didn't tag you on it because he didn't choose you to go with him.
I wonder if I got him blocked. I wonder if I got the guy blocked.
Wouldn't that just be deliciously ironic?
Hey, Zeus, what's his...
At J underscore, I can't say it on the
yeah,
air.
You can't
actually,
say that.
I'll have to type it in for you.
Gambo, look at the response to our most recent tweet from the Burns and Gambo show account.
I'll look.
I would have chosen Bernsey987 to go with me if my wife wasn't right here listening on the
there
app with me.
Amazing.
My wife and I are
colleague.
I would have chosen Bernsey. Why?
Yes.
Because Bernsey would throw down some hurricanes with him.
Would.
That's why.
That's the thing. You wouldn't get New Orleans. You wouldn't get it.
Why? Because I don't drink?
Yes.
Correct.
Because
so
you don't drink.
You don't drink.
Great. So you're stereotyping all of us that don't drink. We can't like New Orleans. So everybody out there that's like me that doesn't drink, you can't go to New Orleans because you'd be no fun.
I'm just saying.
I'm fun all the time, man.
I don't think
I'm
you
fun
24/7.
Like I'm always fun.
Gambo, I don't think you'd like it
that's
that much.
That's the problem, yeah.
That's the problem is that you wouldn't like it very much. I just don't. Have you heard Bickley talk about it? Bickley the other day said that New Orleans is like the Las Vegas for drinkers.
Oh God.
Basically. That it's and to which Vinny said, I thought Vegas was the Vegas for drinkers.
Oh, I was just going
to
say that.
Right, and Bickley's like, no. New Orleans takes it to another level.
So one of my wife's bucket list items, we went to Ireland a few years ago for St. Patrick's Day.
Yes.
And we spent a lot of time in the country. I stayed at this unbelievable castle. I loved every second of it. We went to Galway. We saw the cliffs of Moher. We went to go see where her movie, the movie with the bridge and the actor.
P.S. I Love You.
P.S. I Love You. Thank you. We went to go see that bridge that she loved that movie. But one day, you know, we spent 2 days in Dublin. And her goal was, so we saw the St. Paddy's Day parade, and her goal was to be at a bar on St. Paddy's Day. I don't drink. So I'm sitting there at this. I had the most miserable time of my life. So I walk in there with this blonde bombshell in a bar in Dublin, Ireland, where there's no girls. It's 99% guys. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I'm going to get into, like, 7 fights tonight. Like, I don't drink. I'm in a bar. There's 300 people here. 298 of them are guys. They're all looking at my wife because she doesn't look like anybody they've ever seen in Ireland. I'm like, ugh, I hated it. Yeah. I hated being in a bar
in Dublin
on St. Paddy's Day. I hated it.
Why are you lobbying for New Orleans then? Like, what makes you think it would be different?
Because it's on the streets. It's not like in a bar. You don't like
the streets are a bar.
I swear to God, I don't think you know a damn thing about New Orleans. I really don't think you know exactly how New Orleans works.
Listen, I got
the
connections.
The whole thing is a bar.
We'd be able to go to a Pelicans game and sit on the court. I know people.
Oh, Gambo, you never cease to amuse.
Saints
Gambo.
Game.
You never cease to amuse. You never do. The Arizona Cardinals' reliance upon their rookies. Kyler Murray, obviously we know about him, right? He's putting up some unbelievable numbers. Byron Murphy, Keyshawn Johnson, Deontay Thompson. The Athletic website took a look at the 10 teams getting the most out of their rookie haul. Now, to be fair, full disclosure, Kyler Murray is driving most of this.
Of course.
Obviously.
Whatever, but
right?
It worked out, right?
But the Arizona Cardinals are in the top 10.
Yeah, there are teams that have picked guys number one that haven't worked out before. The Arizona Cardinals are fourth with rookie haul, fourth in the NFL. It has to turn somewhere. It turns with the draft. It doesn't turn with free agency. The turnaround starts with the draft. If you come out of this and Kyler Murphy is a legitimate star quarterback, and Byron Murphy is a top 2 cornerback, and Keyshawn Johnson ends up being a top 3 receiver, and Zach Allen ends up being one of your solid defensive linemen. You had a great draft. If those guys are all contributors and playing. Now, who knows what you get from Isabella, Hakeem Butler, some of the other draft picks they had. But if those guys all hit, and it looks good, it's early, I don't want to jump the gun on it, but looks good. This will be the best draft that they've had in a while, and it'll be the draft that they could use to kind of turn this thing around.
Well,
it has to be the draft. It has to be.
And the draft that, let's be honest about it, that would reaffirm a little bit of faith in Steve Keim as a drafter. He needs a draft like this.
No question.
He needs because as good as encouraging is the word I'll use, as encouraging as this season has been, it's widely expected the Arizona Cardinals are going to have, what would they pick right now, 14th, I think is what I said earlier in the week? Okay. So you're going to have another pretty good first-round pick, and you still have a lot of holes to fill, and Steve Keim still has a lot of work to do. If this, even if Kyler Murray is great and the rest of this draft class was just so-so, there would be a lot of Cardinal fans who would question whether Steve Keim should be the person in charge of making those picks next April. And they would be right to do so. They would be fair to do so.
Because he's had like six draft picks that haven't worked out.
Absolutely.
That were top picks.
So what he
needs, round picks that didn't work out.
He needs a good, deep draft class of guys working out.
Like this one.
Like this one. So that faith will be reaffirmed in Steve Keim's ability to be entrusted with the next draft class. Because we need that faith.
Yeah, 100%. You have to have, if this draft class hits, you'll have more faith in his ability to orchestrate the next draft class. You'll have more faith in his ability to do it if this draft class hits. Obviously, Murray, it wasn't as easy as everybody thinks it was. Oh, let's just get rid of Josh Rosen and let's draft Kyler Murray. That's not an easy decision. You took Rosen with a top 10 pick last year. So they made that decision, and it looks 100% like the right decision. Byron Murphy in the second round, I don't know if you could have done much better. I mean, that's a really good pick. I think Allen's going to be really good. I think Keyshawn's going to be good, contributing wide receiver. He's not Chad Williams. He's going to be a good player. What is he, fifth in wide receiver receptions, I think, right now, Keyshawn Johnson?
Yeah, I think so.
I think he's fifth in wide receiver receptions. And I think he's only going to get better. So they're hitting. You've got draft picks that are hitting. I mean, that's what he needs. He needs that more than anybody. The Cardinals need it, but he needs it because you're right. I mean, to have some faith in him going into the next draft class is largely dependent on how this draft class plays out.
Nathan on Twitter, if I won, I would have taken at Gambo 987, no questions.
Damn, yeah. Why? I want to know why.
At Burnsy 987 would bore me.
Oh, man.
I would go for the sources.
Oh, yeah, I got good stories. I got better stories. We'd be sitting on a plane ride. I got a lot of good stories.
I would bore you.
I'll tell you about when I was working for the mob. I got good stories.
I would bore him. You know what? I might be a little boring. I'll cop to it. I mean, certainly, I don't have the stories that you do. I mean, I don't come from a mob background. I don't. Your life experiences, they mine pale in comparison to you, man.
How many times were you on Dance Party USA, Bernsey?
Yes, zero.
I was on Dance Party USA.
Zero.
It was the start of the show.
Right. How many Golden Glove boxers did I manage? None.
I managed professional fighters.
Sorry.
Kevin Kelly, Oba Carr, John David Jackson.
You act like I should know these
names. I managed professional champion boxers.
I mean, Jordan, my life compared to Gambo's is, it's not even close. I'm just a humble kid from the desert.
Yeah, Jesus.
Gambo's life is like an Italian version of Forrest Gump.
It really, you know.
There you go.
I'm giving you a standing ovation right here in Fry's, Jordan. That's absolutely it.
I'm the Italian version
of
Forrest Gump.
He's the Italian Forrest Gump.
I don't know if that's good or not. He wasn't very smart. I guess I'm not very smart. He could run fast. I could run fast.
See?
He liked fish, seafood, and I liked seafood.
You know what? Jesus, you're right. You should have taken Gambo. He got the girl in the end.
I got the girl in the end.
A boring guy from Phoenix or the Italian Forrest Gump?
Didn't he end up with money?
Oh, yeah. Well,
he
because
had money.
He invested. He was like one of the first investors in Apple.
Yeah.
And he made all that money in the shrimp when the hurricane hit, and it killed all the other boats except for his. Yeah. I've said it many times. There's the phrase semi-charmed kind of life. You live a fully charmed kind of life. 100% fully vested, charmed kind of life.
Yeah.
You do.
Yeah. So just because I'm not going to sit back and drink.
I'm boring.
I can have an O'Doul's. I'll have a hot chocolate.
I can have an O'Doul's.
Can I have a soda water with lime, please?
I think they kick you out of New Orleans for ordering a soda water with lime. You, get out of here. I don't care if you're the Italian Forrest Gump. Get out.
It's like a pizza place in New York when they ask for ranch, you ask for ranch dressing. You want what?
You want ranch?
Have ranch dressing?
Yeah.
For what? You don't got no salad. I want to dip my pizza in it. You want to do what? You want to dip pizza in ranch dressing? Get the hell out of here.
Exactly. The game is headlined by a matchup of two top 10 rookie quarterbacks. And the predictions for Sunday's Cardinals-Giants game, they are all over the place. We'll talk about that and give you our predictions next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
When has distance ever stopped the great John Gambadoro?
To look at the predictions for this game on Sunday, Cardinals and the Giants, the national experts are, rightfully so, pretty split. Pretty split. Sports Illustrated, Pro Football Focus, ESPN. This is, in many ways, a toss-up game for these two teams.
It's a hard game to pick. Yeah.
It is a hard game to pick. I mean, your heart, if you're a Cardinal fan, your heart wants to tell you, Cardinals are going to win this game. And I think they very well might. In fact, I'll be honest with you, I think they are going to win this game. Only because I like the Cardinals quarterback better than I like the Giants quarterback. I think he's more accomplished at this point in his career. And I think even though Saquon Barkley scares me, I do like what you said earlier in the show. They're really, Atlanta has a multifaceted offense filled with a bunch of guys who can beat you. I don't think the Giants do. I think the Giants have one guy who can beat you offensively and a tight end who might put up some decent numbers, but that's it. Sterling Shepard's out. Golden Tate's just coming back off the suspension. He's still kind of getting his feet wet.
He's good, but he's never been that great anyway.
Right.
There's no Julio Jones there.
No, there's no Mohamed Sanu. Oh. There's no Austin Hooper. There's no none of those guys. No, Calvin Ridley.
Put it this way. I don't think there's anybody on that team to fear. You said that Saquon Barkley. You could put your emphasis into stopping Saquon Barkley and not be that afraid of Ingram and the wide receivers that they have, because they don't have anybody. Odell Beckham Jr. is not there anymore.
Right.
You know, he's not. So you could really concentrate on stopping the run, stopping Barkley, and I would, because Barkley could beat you out of the backfield catching the passes too. So you do that, and then you take your chances with the wide receivers and the tight end, because they're not that good. And Jones throws the ball in tight spaces, and there's a really good chance that they'll get their first pick in this game. I mean, if they don't get one today, I don't know if they're ever going to get one. I mean, tomorrow and Sunday. I just don't know.
I don't know if they are either. I'm picking the Cardinals in this game. I could see it going either way. I could see it. I could see a whole bunch of different things happening. More than anything, I'm kind of curious to see how the national media reacts when they get a chance to really watch a Kyler Murray game beginning to end. You know, this week we had, and I'm basing this opinion off of First Take, and that's probably the wrong way to go about this. But man, to think that guys on a national TV show haven't watched that much Cardinals football, but to hear them talk about Kyler Murray, it was pretty obvious they haven't watched a lot of Cardinals football, right?
No, and that's what I said. I think that I said this earlier week. They're trying to fool 95% of the audience that's never watched Kyler Murray play either. And they're acting like they're the experts. Oh, we know we've seen, you haven't seen him play, because I can hear just by listening to them talk.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to be a fool to think that they haven't watched any Cardinals games, any bit of Cardinal games, because the way they're talking, they're not talking with any sense of intelligence on what the Cardinals and Kyler Murray are doing.
And I get it. If I were them, I would probably concentrate on who do I need to watch? I need to watch the Cowboys every week, right? I need to watch the Packers every week. I need to watch the Patriots every week. I need to watch New York every week. You know, I don't need to watch the Arizona Cardinals every week. I don't need to watch some of the lesser teams every single week, because I'm not going to talk about them to a national audience. I get it. I'd probably do the same thing.
Sure.
If I were Max Kellerman.
Yeah.
But now that they're playing the Giants.
Now you have to watch them.
You have to watch the Giants. Yeah, you have to watch Giants. Yeah, you have to watch them. I get it.
You know, it doesn't matter. If he has a good game, it doesn't matter. Kyler Murray's the franchise quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals. They're going to try to build this team around him, whether he has a good game against the Giants or a bad game. But if you wanted to shut up the national media, and I don't care that much about the national media, but if you wanted to shut them up and he plays a really good game, it'll be interesting to see what those Yahoos say on Monday if Kyler Murray has a big game against them.
Yeah.
The kid was what, the offensive player of the week?
Yes, the offensive player of the week.
Yes. Accolades are coming records are being broken. What was the 20 completions, six games in a row?
Never been done before.
Never been done before. A rookie quarterback opening his career with 20, with six straight games with at least 20 completions. There are things that this kid is doing that are special. There are things that he's doing that are special. 300 yards, three touchdowns last week. Like, this kid is trending in the right direction to be a good quarterback. There's just a lot of the country hasn't been able to see it yet.
Here's what else is trending in the right direction. The Cardinals offensive line, Steve Keim, his weekly visit with Duggan Wolf exclusively every Friday here on our morning show on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. Very complimentary about the five guys up front.
That is the one area that I'm extremely proud of this football team. You know, they're a group that has been ridiculed in the media and has taken a lot of shots. And to me, those are people who haven't watched the tape because those guys have played extremely well. This past week, Justin Murray played his best game as a pro. Justin Pugh, his best game as a Cardinal, and did an extremely good job against Grady Jarrett, who's one of the best defensive linemen in the NFL. AQ's been consistent. Sweezy's been really good. Physical. And then DJ Humphries has played his best ball this year. So I think those guys have done a fantastic job. And I think it starts with Sean Coogler, who, in my opinion, is one of the best line coaches in the NFL.
And I thought it was really interesting hearing Cliff Kingsbury today. Given what Mark Schlereth said yesterday or 2 days ago on the Bickley and Murata show about how he had heard some offensive linemen who weren't happy with the play calling. And I know we kind of talked about that yesterday. Here's Kingsbury today saying, I put the offensive line in a tough spot early this season, and I realize that now.
I've been very pleased with that group. I think we put them in some tough spots, or I put them in some tough spots early when we became a drop-back team. We got behind in some of those games, and you know, that was all me. But they've developed. I think we're all getting a feel for each other and how this offense operates. And once again, we'll continue to grow each week, and I don't think we're anywhere near what we can be, and hopefully we get there at some point this season.
Cliff making it sound like a very collaborative effort between he, the offensive line, Coogler, to try to figure out what makes it work for everybody.
We said this with McCoy. We said McCoy would have been foolish not to look at what success they had under Bruce Arians with certain guys like David Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been foolish for Cliff Kingsbury to come in here with an air raid system and not pay attention to what Sean Coogler has to say about what works running the football based on what the offensive line is going to do with his teachings.
Yep.
It would have been foolish.
Yep.
And it looks like Cliff Kingsbury has a very open mind and is willing to delegate and allow a coach like Sean Coogler to have a lot of say into the running game and how it can work.
It's time for the Coors Light What's On Tonight, brought to you by Coors Light. Coors Light Mountain Cold Refreshment made to chill. We're going to watch Game 5 of the National League Championship Series, or the American League Championship Series.
Yankees are up 4-1 in the bottom of the fifth inning right now.
And the Cardinals Injury Report, brought to you by the Joint Chiropractic. Improve your quality of life with routine, affordable chiropractic care. Find one of over 30 locations by visiting thejoint.com today. DJ Foster out. Christian Kirk, David Johnson, game time decisions for Sunday. We're out of here. We'll see you Monday at 2 o'clock.
Have a good night, everyone.